This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
I think the last time we talked, and some of my other lawyer buddies disagree, I think they're in a position now where Karen Reed is going to have to get on the stand and testify. I don't see any way around it.
I
know that no defense attorney ever wants to put their client on, if you can avoid it, because typically all you can get is bad out of that. The ratio of bad to good in terms of what you're going to get from putting your client on is always skewed highly in favor of the bad, because it's so easy for the jury to misinterpret something, to take a dislike to the person when they're on the, whatever the case may be. And as human beings, you know, those kind of things add up when you're sitting in a room deliberating about somebody's, you know, life and or freedom. And, you know, they shouldn't factor in, but the reality is they do.
And we haven't heard all the Proctor stuff yet, which will certainly, you know, I'm sure stain the eyes of the jury of the.
We haven't gotten into. Let's not pretend like this is a shit investigation. I mean, that's completely all coming.
Yeah. Yep.
Like there's no avoiding that for them, you know? So like Brennan's smart enough to front load some of his most powerful material, you know, and like a perfect example of what he did in terms of putting Jen McCabe right after Ian Whiffen, so that you've got the 227 Google searches bullshit. And now I'm going to give you Jen McCabe. Mm-hmm. So it's fresh in your memory. You just heard the guy from the company that, you know, makes the software that they use telling you it's bullshit. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to hear her. And I'm assuming that's going to be the last thing that Jackson's going to question her about.
Yeah.
Like, you know, strategically, like I have a lot of conversations with Allison, who's my law partner. Yeah. And I'm like, man, you know, I would just skip it. Yeah. But you don't need it in this case. I mean, to establish reasonable doubt, you stick with the facts that matter. And that's John O'Keefe's body in the vehicle. And then the only thing that you have to try to deal with from the defense side of it is the taillight showing up. And frankly, I think it's a bigger problem for the Commonwealth to explain how that taillight ended up all over that front yard in terms of being spread out. None of it's found in the initial searches when the snow is not deep at all. It's like those are problems for the Commonwealth that if it's done with care by the defense, that they could put that onus on them, because that's where you kind of paint Proctor as the villain that had his fingers in every part of this investigation. And that becomes the only thing in terms of a conspiracy, if you want to call it a one person cop corrupt, you know, frame job, then, you know, it's a much smaller hill to climb for the defense than the whole thing, you know, wrapping it all up, the relationships between the people in the house and the cops and all that shit. That's just, it's a tough sell, man.
It's a very tough sell. How do you think McCabe is doing thus far in her questioning and cross? I know I've looked at opinions on both sides of this, and it's either she's, you know, horrible or she's knocking it out of the park.
I don't look at it from a person who has watched the first trial and reached some kind of conclusion based on the state's case and the evidence that they have, you know, because like I've formed an opinion on.
How is she reading to the jury? I guess is more.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what the question is.
Yes, yes.
Because when you're on Twitter and you're looking at all the people that are so, you know, just dug in on their position,
they're gonna say whatever.
Like I don't give a shit what they think.
Yep, exactly.
Frankly, what I care about is how she's coming off to the jury, and she's coming off is a very credible witness.
Yeah.
Like she had, that is the problem with having a retrial. Mm-hmm. Everything gets to get corrected. Everything that was brutal for both sides, they're going to go to great lengths to make sure that they're cleared up by the time they go to trial the second time. Jen McCabe was a problem for them. She was very defensive. She was very, you know, there was a real animus that could be sensed between her and Jackson in the first trial that was not a good look for her. She has cleared that up. She comes off, she's been able to maintain her composure. you know, and she comes off as very credible. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's going to, and Jackson has not been able to crack her.
Yeah.
And,
I mean,
and I don't, and she's now got a day to relax.
Yeah.
You know,
no, yeah.
She's going to come back refreshed and, you know, ready for round two. And I fully expect that she's going to be able to withstand the cross-examination stuff.
Yeah.
Just like she did the first time. So, you know, I think that people that are watching that objectively and are you know, saying that he's smoking her are just not being objective. They're just so dug into their position. Yeah. She's a problem. She's a real problem for the defense at this point. And, you know, I mean, were they able to show that she did lie to the feds? Yeah, they were able to show that. I mean, she did. She was like, whatever the case may be, whatever the reason.
Yeah.
You know, I think if I were to ask you, oh, the feds were just at your place, you know, a half an hour after you made these phone calls and you're like, oh yeah, I forgot to tell them about three people, I would think you were full of shit.
Sure.
You know, so I mean,
you're more scared.
That, right. I mean, yeah. that's going to be like a little cloud over her head.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I think that there were some holes that were poked, but for the most part, she's done a very credible job. I think she's coming off to those people in the box that have no idea or theoretically have no idea what this case entails and all the shit that's been going on surrounding it, that she's coming off as a credible witness. And and frankly, as far as Hank Brennan's concerned, that's all he gives a shit about.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I feel like she's come off very credible. I think Carrie came off very credible. I know there's like they and I don't know that it's helping them where they're picking at some kind of small, like, well, you said it this way here and it's a little bit this way here. And it's, and there has been some word with Carrie where she didn't say something in one of the, I forget exactly how it all went, but there was something that was said that, wasn't like she said, but it wasn't quite accurate in one of the testimonies. I think it was, but no one was denying anything. It was just like, yeah, I guess that's how.
Way that if I'm Hank Brennan, like clearing up like this entire, like these text messages that are going on between everybody that was in that house the following morning is a very simple task. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Tony, if I was at your, you know, you were throwing a rager at your house or you're having some buddies over, you're like, Bob, come over. He was like, oh yeah, man, I'll be over later tonight. We're at the bar. I'll stop by, you know, and you had seven or eight people over there and we're all like, oh yeah, Bob and Allison are coming over and I don't fucking show up. And then you go out into your front yard and I'm dead in your front yard the next day. You're going to be like, you're going to hit these people up. Be like, what the fuck? Did you see him?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that is a totally normal thing for people to do, to hit each other up, probably create a text thread with everybody that was there. They're like, did you see anything? Was he dropped off? Did he come in? Did he ring the bell? Like all of those questions that you had. So, I mean, to me,
I don't know if it's playing well to a jury. It feels like, it feels like they're really like they're going at those witnesses the way they are. It feels.
Yeah. It was painful watching Jackson, like trying to wrap that thing up. Just kind of like I was saying in our lives. And again, you know, I do not believe that Karen Reed hit him based on the scientific evidence.
Sure.
I discount all of the other noise.
Yeah, you can believe that without that.
Science.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, I mean, it's like, is Hank Brennan going to be able to sell me on the concept that John was sideswiped and that he flies 15 feet down? I mean, I don't know. Maybe, like, is he going to have that part of the Commonwealth's case, I don't know, is ever going to get any better.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to make everything that he can get better in terms of the people in the house. That's why I've always been like, you are weakening the defense's case by incorporating something that you're never going to be able to prove up, which is that some shit took place inside that house and they pulled him out and left him to die. You know, I mean, like you can't, like there's nothing that exists that we know of that is going to be able to prove that up. So all you're doing is murkying up the waters. And I've said it once, I've said it a million times. My job, if I'm defending Karen Reed, is to get a not guilty, especially in light of the fact that I believe that she's factually innocent, because the science does not support what the Commonwealth is saying happened. You know, like that's where I'm living. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely where I'm living. I'm living 100% with these two ARCA guys, and I'm going from there. And I'm leaning on the fact that Scotty Bello, their own ME, couldn't and wouldn't call it a homicide. You know, I mean, it wasn't enough for her. She didn't think that those injuries were simpatico with a motor vehicle strike of a pedestrian. So that's where I'm living in that world right there. Yeah. Because when you, I don't know, it's frustrating in a lot of different ways. And it's created this entire universe that has now adopted this concept that something happened in that house. Mm-hmm. And I think if you would have stuck with the Bowden defense, that this was just an ass investigation, and you've got an ass cop, namely Proctor, that was leading it, mm-hmm. who had tunnel vision, man. I mean, there's no other way to look at it other than the dude within the, you know, the early evening hours of that night had it in his mind that Karen hit him and that's what killed him. Mm-hmm. Like, and there was no change in his mind. And, you know, then you're just stuck with like, oh yeah, you know, I'm just going to throw a couple of the pieces of the taillight here in the yard and it's going to sew my case up. It's like the one thing that we know about Ken PD, There are some corrupt motherfuckers, yes. man. I mean, like Sandra Birchmore is a real thing. Yes. That is an actual case that has bled into that department. And, you know, the sad thing about, you know, police agencies and specific police departments is that one bad apple typically does spoil the bunch mm-hmm. in terms of trust from the community. And, you know, it's one of those things where I personally, and I think Yannetti and Jackson and Bob Alessi are brilliant attorneys. They're learned. They're incredibly capable guys. They've been doing it forever. You know, they've never had any issues with the bar, never any disciplinary. Like, everybody's like, oh, he's unscrupulous. No, he's just trying to fucking win his case.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, I'm not buying any of that shit. You know, and it's like the people that really don't understand the dynamics of the discovery process because mm-hmm. they've never been a lawyer and never tried a case. These discovery battles are in every single fucking case. Mm-hmm. Like it is like pulling teeth for both sides to get information from either side in every case, not mm-hmm. just Karen Reed.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, everything that is going on with that, like I predicted that in terms of ARCA coming in like to the T, you know, I was like, mm-hmm. They're coming in, mm-hmm. the new testing's coming in, and she's going to give Hank a long leash in mm-hmm. terms of his cross-examination, which is exactly what she did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that wasn't some great, you know, sign of my brilliance. That was, I've practiced for a long time.
Yeah.
And that, had she barred them, would have been an automatic retrial because she would have been stripping them of their defense,
sure.
her defense, really. Sure. So, yeah, man, it's crazy. It's a crazy case.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. The neighborhood was picture perfect. Manicured lawns, kids riding bikes, friendly smiles exchanged over white picket fences. And then there was him. The guy who never made eye contact. The one who only left his house at night, dragging black trash bags to the curb. Bags that sometimes twitched. He's just a little odd, they said. Just keeps to himself. Until the smell started. Until the missing pets turned into missing people. Until someone finally had the nerve to peek inside that basement window. And if they had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, they could have listened to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi ad-free, and before everyone else, they could have recognized the warning signs. They could have gotten out, but they didn't. And now, they're part of the next episode. Don't make the same mistake. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.